Presently the quire of paper was thrown from the instrument upon the floor, a distance of some 3 or 4 feet, and the music was again produced, louder than before. Next, the guitar, large and heavy as it was dragged out from its place, and carried away to a door, a distance of 5 feet from the table, and that the music recommenced, stronger and clearer than ever. This had all been done while the party sat quietly at the table. At this juncture, in order to see the performance going on at that distance, the writer leaned forward towards it, and in so doing, accidentally extinguished the lamp on the table. But as a good light was reflected upon all of us from a grate of glowing coals directly in front of the party, it was decided not to break the circle to relight the lamp, and the manifestations went on. While we sat thus, the guitar, at a distance of 5 or 6 feet from the party, was played upon exquisitely, and for several minutes, by some power other than that of any one bodily present. The instrument was partially in shadow, and the hand that swept its strings could not be seen, but the music was surpassingly beautiful. It was of a character entirely new to those who listened, and was sweeter, softer, and more harmonious than anything I have ever heard. Portions of it were filled with a certain soft and wild melody that seemed to be the echo of other music far away, and for the exquisite sweetness of which there are no words. It was of that music that softer falls than petals from blown roses on the grass, or night dews on still waters between walls of shadowy granite in a gleaming pass. Anon it changed, and rose to a full orb of strong, tempestuous melody, filling the house with its sounds. It was heard by a lady residing in another part of the house, who inquired about it the next day, thus proving the strength and the reality of this immortal music. It was asked by one of the circle, "Can you strike on all the chords at once?" And, by responses on the strings, "Yes," and this was actually done. The guitar was then removed to a corner of the room, still farther off, and as soon as all were seated, it was again played upon, at that distance, for some time. Then it was brought back by invisible means and placed near the table. Mr. Home remarked that all this transcended anything of the kind in his previous experience, and he proposed to see what they could do, taking the guitar to the most distant corner of the room. It was suggested to him by us that this would be useless, as they could do nothing at that distance from himself, but upon his taking his seat again, the spirits began playing the instrument in that farthest corner exclamation mark at a distance, as ascertained by subsequent measurement, of nearly 11 feet from the circle or the medium. Then the guitar was moved from its place by the spirits and brought towards the circle. But, encountering a heavy mahogany chair on the way, the instrument was laid down and the chair dragged several feet out of the way, after which the guitar was taken up and carried all around the circle by the invisibles, and at length deposited in the opposite corner. In a few moments more the writer saw it poised in the air, top upwards, and nearly over his head. The remark was made, "Well, if I did not see this myself, I wouldn't believe it," on other testimony, whereupon the instrument reached forward and playfully tapped the speaker 3 times upon the shoulder. Then it was passed across the table, over his head, towards Mr. Home, whom it lightly touched several times upon the head. Being close to it during this performance, I watched it narrowly by the aid of the firelight. The bottom end of the instrument was very near my face, while the opposite end was thus being used. It was not, in fact, 6 inches above my head, and just in front of me. The indistinct outline of a human hand could be seen grasping the instrument just below its center. Reaching up, I grasped the instrument firmly in both hands and held it above my head, requesting at the same time that the one who had been performing would now play it if possible. Immediately the strings were touched as if by human fingers, though now invisible, and the guitar was played as well while thus held in the air as it had been while on the floor. The quire of paper before spoken of was taken from the floor, slowly lifted up, and placed upon the table, as I can affirm, without the aid of a human hand. Sitting at that end of the table where this was done, I was enabled to see the whole of this proceeding. The quire of paper was placed upon the edge of the table, and so near my hand as to touch it. This was done slowly and deliberately, and this time at least I was permitted to see plainly and clearly the hand that had hold of it. It was evidently a lady's hand, very thin, very pale, and remarkably attenuated. The conformation of this hand was peculiar. The fingers were of an almost preternatural length, and seemed to be set wide apart. The extreme pallor of the entire hand was also remarkable. But perhaps the most noticeable thing about it was the shape of the fingers, which, in addition to their length and thinness, were unusually pointed at the ends. They tapered rapidly and evenly toward the tips. The hand also narrowed from the lower knuckles to the wrist, where it ended. All this could be seen by such light as was in the room, while the hand was for a few moments holding the paper upon the edge of the table. It suddenly dashed. The writer has since been shown a daguerreotype taken from a picture of the lady whose name was written as above described, and whose disease was consumption. The portrait was taken just before her death, and the hands and fingers in the daguerreotype, although rather indistinct, bear a most close and remarkable resemblance to the hand described above. Disappeared, and in a moment the pencil was thrown from some quarter, and fell upon the table, where the hand again appeared, took it, and began to write. This was in plain sight, being only shaded by one of the circle who was sitting between the paper on the table and the fire. The hands of each one present were upon the table, in full view, so that it could not have been one of the party who was thus writing. Being the nearest one to the hand, I bent down close to it as it wrote, to see the whole of it. It extended no farther than the wrist. With a feeling of curiosity natural under the circumstances, I brought my face close to it in the endeavor to see exactly what it was, and, in so doing, probably, destroyed the electric or magnetic influence by which it was working, for the pencil dropped and the hand vanished. The writing was afterwards examined, and proved to be the name, in her own proper handwriting, of a relative and intimate lady friend of one in the circle, who passed away some years since. Other marks were also made, and the word dear had been written just as the pencil dropped. This writing has been preserved, and remains as an evidence of the reality, of the fact, that it was produced by no hand of any one bodily in that room I know and affirm. The hand afterwards came and shook hands with each one present. I felt it minutely. It was tolerably well and symmetrically made, though not perfect, and it was soft and slightly warm. It ended at the wrist. Chapter 4. In England. On the 31st of March, 1855, I sailed from Boston for England in the Africa, the late Captain Harrison being the captain of the ship. On the 9th day of our voyage we neared England, and the signal cannon was fired. I never can forget my feelings as I looked around me, and saw only joy beaming on the faces of my fellow passengers, some there were who were about to reach their home, and the thought of kind friends waiting to welcome them brought the smile of joy on their countenances. Others were travellers who saw the old world with all her art treasures spread before them, and the monotony of a sea voyage so near its termination. I stood there alone, with not one friend to welcome me, broken down in health, and my hopes and fairest dreams of youth, all, as I thought, forever fled. The only prospect I had was that of a few months' suffering, and then to pass from earth. I had this strange power also, which made a few look with pity on me as a poor deluded being, only devil sent to lure souls to destruction, while others were not chary in treating me as a base impostor. I stood there on a ship's deck amongst the crowd of passengers, and a sense of utter loneliness crept over me, until my very heart seemed too heavy for me to bear up against it. I sought my cabin, and prayed to God to vouchsafe one ray of hope to cheer me. In a few moments I felt a sense of joy come over me, and when I rose, I was as happy as the happiest of the throng. I reached Cox's Hotel in Jermyn Street on the evening of the 9th of April, and as soon as Mr. Cox knew who I was, he welcomed me more as a father would welcome a son, than as a stranger whom he had never seen, and from that time to this he has been to me the most sincere and generous friend. It soon became known that I was in England, and in less than a month I had more engagements than I could well fulfill. While at Cox's Hotel, Lord Brougham expressed a desire to see me for the purpose of investigating the phenomena, and as his lordship's evenings were fully occupied, I appointed an early afternoon. Accordingly, his lordship came accompanied by Sir David Brewster, with whom and Mr. Cox I had a séance, which shortly afterwards, in consequence of the misrepresentations and evasions of Sir David Brewster, became of considerable public interest, inasmuch as it was made the means of a general discussion in the newspapers on the subject of the spiritual phenomena. There are few matters in which Sir David Brewster has come before the public, which have brought more shame upon him, than his conduct and assertions on this occasion, in which he manifested not only a disregard for truth, but also a disloyalty to scientific observation, and to the use of his own eyesight and natural faculties. In order that Lord Brougham might not be compelled to deny Sir David's statements, he found it necessary that he should be silent, and I have some reason to complain that his lordship preferred sacrificing me to his desire not to immolate his friend, since his silence was by many misconstrued to my disadvantage. The correspondence which ensued was so interesting and characteristic, and is moreover so useful as being the first great occasion on which one of the pretended magnates of science has come forward on the subject of these phenomena, that I have thought it well to give the substance of it, with some pertinent remarks on Sir David Brewster's conduct, in an appendix. It will be a means whereby his character may be the better known, not only for his untruthful dealing with this subject, but also in his own domain of science, in which the same unfaithfulness to truth will be seen to be the characteristic of his mind. The immediate effect, however, of this ventilation of the subject was, as I have invariably found it, to excite only the greater interest in the phenomena, and it was thereby the means of convincing numbers of all classes who visited me. My time was fully occupied, notwithstanding my delicate health, in giving seances to anxious inquirers of all ranks and classes, from the peer to the artisan, and including men of all the professions high in art, science, and literature, who were both more competent and truthful than I found Sir David Brewster to be to form a correct conclusion. After some time in Jermyn Street, I went to stay with a friend at Ealing, who was deeply interested in the subject, and his house was, during the greater part of my stay, almost besieged by persons wishing to witness the phenomena. Hundreds had their wishes gratified, and saw what has proved enough to be the turning point of their lives, and what rendered no longer possible those materialistic and skeptical notions, which are still unhappily so rife amongst the most highly educated classes at this day. Many interesting incidents occurred during my stay at Ealing, and the hands and once or twice the head of the spirit form were repeatedly seen by many, who publicly testified to the fact. But although I was apparently wearing out my life by the fatigue and excitement which these constant seances caused to me, I was not allowed to become proud of my position, for the good clergyman of Ealing found it his duty to publicly preach against me, and to attribute the manifestations to the devil. The position which is taken up by many of the clergy is to me, in itself, an extraordinary manifestation, for certainly these phenomena, whether from God or from the devil, have in 10 years caused more converts to the great truths of immortality and angel communion, with all that flows from these great facts, than all the sects in Christendom have made during the same period. Indeed, whilst the churches are losing their adherents, the belief in spiritual laws caused by these external manifestations is becoming widely spread through the skeptical masses. It is not at all improbable that in pursuing their new studies, these last may be the means in their turn of converting the clergy to a belief in spiritual laws. Whilst I was at Ealing, a distinguished novelist, accompanied by his son, attended a séance, at which some very remarkable manifestations occurred, and which were chiefly directed to him. The rappings on the table suddenly became unusually firm and loud. He asked what spirit is present. The alphabet was called over, and the response was, "I am the spirit who influenced you to write Z." "Indeed," said he, "I wish you would give me some tangible proof of your presence." "What proof?" "Will you take my hand?" "Yes," and putting his hand beneath the surface of the table, it was immediately seized by a powerful grasp, which made him start to his feet in evident trepidation, exhibiting a momentary suspicion that a trick had been played upon him, seeing, however, that all the persons around him were sitting with their hands quietly reposing on the table. He recovered his composure, and offering an apology for the uncontrollable excitement caused by such an unexpected demonstration, he resumed his seat. The following words were then spelt out: "We wish you to believe in the dash," and then stopped. It was asked of the spirit, "In what am I to believe? In the medium? No. In the manifestations? No." At that moment he was gently tapped upon the knee, and putting his hand down, a cross was placed there by the spirit, which thus significantly finished the sentence. The cross was made of cardboard, and had been lying on a small table with other ornamental articles in a distant part of the large room in which the party was seated. The investigator, apparently much impressed with the incident, turned to Mrs. Rymer, and asked permission to retain the cross as a souvenir, to which she assented, saying that its only value to her was that it had been made by her boy, then recently deceased, but she could have no objection to him keeping it, if he would remember the injunction. He bowed his assent, and placing the souvenir in his breast pocket, carried the cross away with him. On another occasion the children had been playing in the garden with some fresh gathered flowers, out of which they had formed a wreath. A séance was proposed. It was a calm summer's evening, with the full moon just rising. A large circular-shaped table was selected in the drawing room, which room was on a level with the garden lawn, the French windows extending to the ground, and the moonlight twilight shone through them sufficiently to make everything in the room visible. The party seated themselves around the half-circle of the table, leaving the other half nearest to the garden window vacant. After several minor incidents had occurred, the table rose slowly from the ground, and ascended to the ceiling of the room, out of the reach of all but Mr. Coleman, who was tall enough to just touch its rim. It then descended steadily and settled on the floor with no more sound than if it had been a feather's weight. Having taken their seats again, a beautifully formed feminine hand became distinctly visible to all the party present. It came up from the vacant side of the table, and made an unavailing effort, at first, to reach a small handbell which had been placed there. In a short time, the fleshy and delicately formed arm became visible up to the elbow, and was enveloped in what appeared to be a gauze sleeve, through which it was transparently seen. The fingers then took up the bell, 101 held it suspended for a moment, rung it, and slowly carried it, ringing, beneath the table. Mr. Coleman, finding the bell jingling against his knee, put down his hand, received it, and placed it on the table. He then asked if he might feel the hand, which was neither warm nor cold, but of velvety softness, and it was placed with a gentle pressure in his. When the hand first appeared, all in the circle had hold of each other's hand, I having, at Mr. Coleman's request, placed both my hands in Mr. Coleman's grasp. Whilst seated in this position, the wreath of flowers, which had been made by the children, was seen by all to be lifted from my head, where it had been playfully placed a short time previously. No hand was visible. The wreath then descended to within an inch of the surface of the table. It then slowly traversed round the circle and back again to Mr. Coleman, who took it, and retained it at home until the flowers withered. At another sitting, each person in the circle who wore a ring had it gently removed by a spirit hand, the hand being seen afterwards with all the rings on its fingers, and after displaying itself by turning about, showing the back and palm two or three times, inverted itself, and cast the rings upon the table. One evening at Ealing, Sir David Brewster, Mrs. Trollope the authoress, and her son Mr. Thomas Trollope, and several others were present. The table at which the party sat was a long telescopic dining table, having two legs at each end and none in the centre. One end of it was occupied by Mr. Trollope, Sir David Brewster, and a lady. I sat about the centre of one side, having Mrs. Trollope on my left, the others present occupying the remainder of the table. There was no cloth or drapery of any kind. Sir David was invited to look under the table and make every investigation, and he did most properly avail himself of the opportunity afforded him by carefully looking under the table, both before sounds were heard and during the time they were being made. On this occasion Sir David tried to lift the table. Sometimes he could not, at other times he could, or, as Sir David said, the table was made light and heavy at command. An accordion was called for, hymns and tunes were played, and without any visible agency. After the party broke up, Sir David, in the course of conversation, said, I should have liked if we had been all standing when the table lifted. Sir David, Mr. Trollope, and Mr. Rymer then sat down to see if it were possible to move the table or to raise it by their feet, but it could not be moved by the united efforts of the feet of all three. Sir David was invited to come the next evening for the purpose of complying with his request of standing at the table, but he could not come, having a pre-engagement. This table, which was 12 feet long, has been sometimes completely turned over, replaced, and again turned over, all our hands being on the surface. Occasionally it has been moved while we were all standing, without anyone touching it, even with their hands. Mr. Trollope came on the following evening. We sat round the same table as on the previous evening. The alpha bet was called for, and three of us were told to go into another room, to get a smaller table, 103, and stand. We were not to sit, but to stand. We did so, and a heavy card table, on pillar and claus, and which was brought from another room, and at which we had never sat before, was repeatedly lifted off the ground at least 20 inches. One evening a gentleman was present when it was intimated to him through the alphabet by knocks on the table that his Aunt Dorothy was present. He was surprised, and assured us that could not be so, for he never had an aunt. He afterwards wrote to his sister, who was residing in the north of England, and this was her reply, I never heard of our father having a sister. There were four sons, and their father died when they were all very young, but I expect to see my elder sister who knows more of our family, and I will ask her. P.S. She has just come, and I find our father had a sister. Our grandfather was twice married. By his first wife he had one daughter whose name was Dorothy, and who died an infant, and who, of course, was our aunt. One evening as Mr. Rymer was passing through the room he stood for a few moments at the end of the table. His attention was arrested by the sounds, and it was stated to be his little boy, who had passed away some years before. He asked if he recollected how pleased he was when on earth to place him a chair on his return home. The chair was immediately moved round the corner of the table, by no visible agency. It was placed behind him, and he sat down upon it. This was in the presence of five persons, one of whom was the editor of a well-known work on the occult sciences. All at the table saw the chair move to where the father was standing. Tile hands of all were on the table. No one knew that he intended to ask for a chair, and until that instant, he said, that he did not know it himself. Another evening we were told through the alphabet that the same little boy was present in spirit. It was asked if he could write as on earth, and he answered that he would try. A sheet of note paper, clean, and without any writing on it of any description was taken, and placed on the cloth. The brass fastenings of the table were then displaced one by one, and fell to the ground. The table was opened or pulled out by no human agency. Everyone in the room was seated at the table and had their hands on its surface. It was then asked if the paper and pencil should be placed on the table near the opening under the cloth. Three sounds, yes. Immediately the form of a small heart was seen under the cloth. It was felt by some who placed their hands upon it. The paper and pencil were then removed, the form of the hand disappearing at the same time. In a few minutes the same form of hand was again seen replacing the paper and the pencil. The alphabet was called for. Dear Papa, I have really done my best. The father removed the paper and pencil, and on that paper was written, Dear Papa, Dear Mama, and signed what? What he was the name of the child. No one was previously aware that it was intended to ask for this to be done. At Sandgate in Kent, where I stayed for some time, 105 at a séance, we numbered 13. The table was elevated at least 2 feet, and the accordion was played. The tune was not known to any of us. We asked the name, and were told that it was the Song of the Sea. A hand and arm in white drapery appeared. It was seen by all at the table on several occasions during the evening, and they had every opportunity of carefully examining it. A few evenings afterwards the table was near the window. It was twilight. Sounds were heard on the accordion. The tune was new to us, and we were told that it was the song of the angels to the mourners. It was followed by a hymn which had been frequently played before. It wore, spelt out by sounds on the table, Some will show you their hands tonight. The table was gently, raised and lifted up several times, a hand appeared above the table and took from the dress of one of the party a miniature brooch, and handed it to several at the table. Hands and arms were then distinctly seen by all at the table of different forms and sizes, sometimes crossed as in prayer, and at other times pointing upwards. On another occasion sounds were heard, communications were made, and hands and arms in white drapery were again seen. A spirit hand took up a Bible which was on the table, and opened it. This was seen by all, and a leaf was folded down. The hand took a pencil and marked the two verses 16 and 17 of the 13th chapter of Saint Matthew, "But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear these things which ye hear, and have not heard them." At this time hands and arms were frequently seen, and they were repeatedly felt by all at the table as distinctly as though they were the hands and arms of living mortals, and frequently they shook hands with them as really and substantially as one man shakes hands with another. Of all the accounts which have been given of the phenomena, there has been none so good as that of Dr. J. G. Wilkinson, who towards the close of the Brewster controversy, wrote a letter to the Morning Advertiser, under the signature of Verax. He had been frequently present at seances, and was eminently qualified not only for the investigation, but for a philosophical expression of their results and consequences, and I need offer no apology for giving at length his eloquent narration which was entitled Evenings with Mr. Home and the Spirits. The great wizard of the North has roused attention to the subject of spiritual manifestations in such a manner, that everybody is talking about them, and, moreover, the country papers are the battleground of letters pro and con, which debate the subject with some warmth, and, wherever a name can be got at, with a little personality. But, hitherto, I have seen no statement of the experience of any of the writers in regard to these manifestations. This is to be regretted, perhaps, because by bringing forward experiences and explanations, the subject might have been divested of some of that heat which is so bad a scientific medium. I will now endeavor, with your permission, to tell what 107 I saw and felt on three separate evenings, stating them in their order. It was late in the spring of this year that I was invited by a friend, well known in the literary world, to pay a visit to the lodgings of Mr. Daniel Douglas Home, then recently arrived from America, for the purpose of witnessing certain remarkable phenomena alleged to be from supernatural causes. Many feelings prompted me to accept the invitation, as, also, did the knowledge that Mr. Home was familiarly known, as a plain honest man, to Dr. Gray, the first homeopathic physician in New York, and for whose character I have the highest esteem. I went to his house in Jermyn Street, and introduced myself on the appointed evening to Mr. Home, who, I found, was a modest, intelligent youth of about 20, in ill health, and, indeed, as he himself informed me, and as, on inspection, I found to be the case, with the marks of consumption legible upon his frame. My wife accompanied me, and I met in Mr. H.'s rooms three friends, all of them men of talent and integrity. Bent upon narrative, and not upon defense or hostility, I will omit nothing, and so I here observe that we were, all of us, believers, beforehand, in the possibility of spiritual manifestations. Before sitting down in the circle, I asked Mr. Home for some account of his antecedents. To the best of my recollection, he gave the following particulars. He was born in Scotland, and was taken to America when a child. Very early in life he used to surprise those with whom he was, by spontaneously narrating, as scenes passing before his eyes, distant events, such as the death of friends and relatives, and these instances of second sight were found to be true telegraphy. It was not his fault, he could not help seeing them. Later on in his career, various noises were heard in the room beside him. This was about the time when the spiritual rapping became known in America. He lived with an aunt, who was greatly scandalized at these circumstances. A member of the Presbyterian Church, these knockings even accompanied him to divine worship, and, coming to the knowledge of his ecclesiastical overman, he was adjudged to be the victim of satanic influences, and either excommunicated, or otherwise banished from the congregation. Afterwards, he became a medical student, but ill health forced him to abandon the idea of pursuing medicine as a calling. Such were the heads of what he told us, in answer to our inquiries, about himself.